So for the last month or two, I've been reflecting on a lot of different things, but one area that I've been exploring, both in practice and in teaching, is the exploration of fear. And I want to explore that today and then continue next time. Some of this can be, sometimes fear can be more personal. Probably many of us also feel some kind of fear or anxiety in relation to the larger social world, social and political world. You know, many different dimensions of that. You know, and it's been interesting to see sometimes how fear or anxiety turns into numbness or avoidance, right? In relation to those are aspects of how we relate to fear. You know, I was noticing in relationship to the killings in Buffalo that there was a certain amount of sadness, but it was powerful also to see a certain degree of numbness there, which I imagine many of us can relate to, you know, the way that we don't fully take in what's there as a way to defend ourselves. And so I want to explore both the nature of fear and how we practice with fear. And probably this time going to be more focusing on the more personal fears, the more individual fears, and then probably next time a little bit more on the social or collective fears, or the fears related to the collectivity. You know, again, many of us may have kind of maybe intensified with the leak of the Supreme Court potential ruling and all the many things happening related to voter suppression and, you know, banning of books and all sorts of things, you know. So probably a little bit more on that next time. So there's something really powerful about the exploration of fear. I have in my study an image, which I want to show you right now. Let's see. Okay. This is from the Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont. This is one of their shows. And I have this in my study, a few feet from where I spend a lot of time. The story of one who set out to study fear. And it's always been both a powerful image and a powerful story, I guess, or intention. And in actuality, the practice of working with fear has been quite important in my own development, you know, exploring fear at different times, you know, to the point where it's become a little more familiar. Maybe like many of you, at a certain point, I could see that when fear is arising, it's actually a good sign. You know, I think Jack Kornfield has a line that when fear arises, we can interpret it as a sign that we're about to learn something. Because we're going into, you know, especially the fear that's not necessarily connected to some kind of obvious, let's say, physical danger, but fears that are more psychological in nature. And so for me, it's been really crucial to be able to want to explore fear when it arises and to have learned a lot, particularly in meditation, but also interpersonally and socially. And so I'll probably talk some about it. I had one retreat where I was fearful for about 10 days in a row. For whatever reason, I have had in my practice history retreats, which brought, you know, major difficult themes in. I had this retreat with fear almost all the time for 10 days, maybe 12, 15 hours a day of fear. I had another retreat with anger for about the same amount of time. I've had other ones where the judgmental mind came in. I've also had wonderful retreats where those things did not come in and I had bliss. So just to be clear. And then maybe like some of you, I've also sometimes noticed in my own experience that sometimes when I need to say something interpersonally or socially, fear arises in me. And I've learned to take that as a sign. Okay, time to talk. Be skillful. Anyone else do something like that? I think it must be a common practice. Yeah, that, you know, so that, you know, working creatively with fear can be a way really to grow, to cut through material, to deepen relationships, and so forth. So that's the kind of the territory I want to explore. And, you know, fear is very, very varied. There are many, many types of fear. You know, there is, again, the obvious type of fear that's related to physical survival. And this is a fear which we share with other living beings, you know, that we can see this in, you know, in ants, we can see this in cats and dogs, we can see fear, we can know that when fear arises in humans, often the way that the physiology works is we have energy. And almost like electric energy goes into the feet so that we can run if we need to, right? And, you know, other animals experience something very similar. And so there are many, many types of fear. And, you know, I'll preview some of it by saying, of course, there are fears that are wise to attend to. And there are fears which are wise to work through, you know, and not take as given the truth. So there's quite a lot of variety of types of fears. And, you know, as I was exploring in the day long, where many of you were yesterday, there's also fear comes virtually at every stage of, I would say, personal and social evolution. Fear comes at every stage. And so that goes back to that quotation from Jack Kornfield, that fear at certain times is a sign that some learning may be about to take place. Again, not necessarily the case with fear that's simply related to physical danger of some kind, but there can be fear at every stage of personal growth all the way up to awakening. The process of awakening itself, fear comes up at many times. It's fear maybe of a loss of who we have thought we are, or a fear of letting go, or a fear of giving up control, and so forth. So it's a very powerful topic to look at. And I'm remembering that I remember something which I think is not in the actual teachings of the Buddha, but it was something I remember hearing when I was studying with Stephen Batchelor a long time ago. He said that when we look to core ignorance, which is in the teachings taken to be the root of basically all problems, we might say, you know, and all dukkha, all forms of greed, hatred, and delusion, that the core ignorance, which is a kind of spiritual ignorance, Stephen said that the emotional counterpart of that deep ignorance is fear. That's interesting, right? And then maybe we'll come back to that. Let's take that as a as a hypothesis. So it's a powerful theme. And, you know, going along with that, there are these beautiful qualities which help us be more skillful with fear. We can talk about courage, maybe patience. We can talk about equanimity, which can be interpreted as the capacity to be balanced and non-reactive with whatever comes up, including fear. You know, we can talk about mindfulness and compassion. So I want to look really at, I think three different areas. Maybe I could bring it into two. What is the nature of fear? And then how do we practice with fear? And I'll probably interweave these some. And I'll point to practicing with fear using mindfulness, practicing with fear, and the importance of at times finding antidotes or finding ways to move out of fear, and then working with fear using a kind of inquiry. So I'll talk about multiple ways of working with fear. That's what I want to explore today. And then I'll track the time so that we have plenty of time to talk together. First of all, two quotes. One is from the Sufi poet Hafez, sort of Rumi's counterpart, I think about 100 years ago, I think from about the 14th or 15th century. Hafez says, "Fear is the cheapest room in the house. I'd like to see you in better living conditions." Okay. And then Thich Nhat Hanh, "We have the power to look deeply at our fears, and then fear cannot control us." That's particularly bringing up the capacities of mindfulness, I think, and an inquiry. So let's look at really three areas that can help us understand the nature of fear. You know, first, the content of fear, the various contents of fear. Secondly, what we find when we explore fear with mindfulness in terms of what's going on with the body. And then thirdly, what's going on with the mind when there's fear. And again, knowing that there are this really great variety of fears, some of them, again, I'll repeat and come back to this, some of them are actually, we might say, skillful and helpful, and it's good to attend to them. And some of them are more connected with delusion and more connected with ignorance, not knowing ourselves well. So first, let me ask, and I want to ask us to respond, what is the content of our fears? What are we afraid of? And let me invite you to put this into the chat. And I'll read from the chat. So maybe just put a few words, 3, 4, 5 words. What are you afraid of? What comes to mind when you think of fear? What's the content of some of your fears? And I'll read these off as they come through. Afraid of getting it wrong. Fear of death. And let's post these to everyone. That which I have no control of. Any other fears? You can send them to everyone. Fear of going crazy. Fear of our own mental stability, mental emotional stability. Fear of loss, losing loved ones. Afraid of looking foolish. Others, Deborah, are you wanting to speak? If you are, you have to unmute, but be brief if you can. And keep on putting stuff in the chat, please. You have to unmute, though.
Okay. I don't know how to post it. I'm sorry. But my fear is not growing in peacefulness and equanimity as I go along in my final chapters.
Yeah. Yeah, not growing and being stuck or just not continuing to grow.
Not growing. My goal is to be peaceful and equanimous with a smile on my face when I'm taking my last breath. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, one friend of mine who named Robert, who had a heart attack and came within 10 minutes of dying. He says that every evening he has the wish, may I die in freedom and die in clarity, right? That's his daily practice. So, yeah, there are all sorts of them, fear of death, fear of loss. I think polls have shown that there's more people are afraid of public speaking than of death, or that comes higher on the list, right? That and it points to, you know, a whole content of fear is related to, again, some of them that came up, looking foolish, you know, having some kind of shame or humiliation as a deep kind of fear, more on a psychological level. You know, what wasn't mentioned also, I think that's very much a fear, is fear of pain. And in a way, you know, one of the deepest fears is simply fear of the unknown. Let me see if there are a few others that came through. I'll just read these. Fear of rejection, fear of something happening to a daughter in pregnancy, losing mental capacity, you know, particularly probably as one gets older. And so it's very, very helpful to look at just the content of the fears and know what they are. You know, we could add very prominent these days are again, fears related to the society. You know, a lot of manipulation of fears of crime, right? Because one thing we know is that fears can be manipulated and have been historically all the time, right? By leaders, by politicians, and so forth. And so we want to look at the fear and notice it. It's also really helpful to look at how fear manifests at the level of the body. One of the benefits for me in having that week, or I think it was 10 days retreat in which there was just fear for virtually the whole time, is I just got to hang out with it. I got to be with the fear. And sometimes it manifested in the body. You know, a lot of times it was more in the mind, but it's helpful to see how fear manifests in the body. And maybe this time I'll try it just with asking for people to raise their hand. What are some ways that you notice fear at the level of the body? Maybe I'll take three or four. You can raise your hand if you'd like, or do, yeah, please, Mary.
I'm afraid of heights, and I get a vertigo really bad. I mean, I literally will physically feel like I'm going to fall over.
Yeah. So the fear can take over the body. Again, as I was mentioning, the survival value of fear is that it actually can help us to, you know, to do one of a few things, you know, to fight or to flee or to freeze, right? And it can also be debilitating in the way that you're mentioning, the vertigo. What's another way that fear manifests in the body? Barbara and then Deborah, yeah. You're muted. You're muted, Barbara.
Beating in my throat.
Sometimes it makes me mute.
Mute.
Yeah, it's in my throat.
Yeah, feeling in the throat. You know, or like Deborah, please.
I was going to say in my gut, in my midsection, and also in my throat.
Yeah, and what do you feel there?
Yeah, I just, my throat will get tight.
Yeah.
There may be beatings. I'll have to check that out, Barbara, but definitely it gets tight and my midsection, my gut gets tight.
Yeah. And I was thinking of the times that I was mentioning where I might have some fear in relation to, I should say this, but I don't want to. And, you know, in this interpersonal or sometimes social situation, for me, it actually leads to a kind of a shaking. You know, I'm actually physically shaking a little bit. And I've got to know, okay, anyone else has something like that at times? Yeah. So maybe, great. So we want to be aware of this. And again, the encouragement is to bring mindfulness to fear. What's there in terms of the content? What's there in terms of how the body is? When we stay with the fear, how does it change? How does it shift? And then let's shift to what occurs at the level of the mind, the thinking. When there's fear. Yeah, Linda, please.
Defensiveness.
Yeah, it can be defensiveness. It often has a repetitive aspect, right? The defensiveness, yeah. Others, please. Deborah, yeah.
It gets very rapid. My thoughts get really fast about what I need to do, what I should be doing, what I didn't do yet. So my thoughts, my mind gets, and my brain feels tight. I feel like something is gripping, pressing on my brain. But the thoughts get really fast.
Really fast, yeah. And can be just continually coming, the mind racing, you know. Okay, Deborah, look, deal with this. Okay, deal with it. Okay, deal with it. You're not dealing. It just goes on and on like that. So we want to study fear. The invitation again, study it. Maybe one or two more. What occurs at the level of the mind? Okay, Nancy and then Mary.
I have a strong desire to not do it. Whatever it is, I don't want to do it. My mind says, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean something that you're afraid of doing it.
That's right.
Yeah, and your mind just says, I'm not going to do it. And is there repetition?
Don't want to. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mary, please.
A number of experiences I've had is when my body, when like my nervous system just starts to go haywire. In one particular instance, I actually found myself just starting automatically to do meta for myself, meta for my body, because I knew I needed to calm down.
Yeah.
And it was not even, Donald, it wasn't even say, I didn't even say, I'm going to do meta. The meta phrases came up.
Yeah. We'll come back to that, Mary. We'll come back to that. I would say that
may I be filled with loving kindness. Just
that's more. That's a mix of fear and practice.
Thank you. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because most people's report of fear, if they have no attention to practice, doesn't include metta. but the fact that it came up naturally, I'll come back to that point because it's a very, very powerful force when there's fear there. So again, the fear, there often can be a loss of clear thinking, loss of rationality. We go into repetitions. We often go way beyond the actual information. We go into huge generalizations at times and so forth. And it's helpful to really study fear closely. Like when we think of the social realm, it's really good to notice how fear is developing socially. I didn't mention this before, but I think that the capacity to be skillful with fear, both individually and on a social level, is something that's deeply going to be deeply needed in the next 10 years. And so it's a little bit scary to say that, but I think that's true, that we need to, it's important for us to train in being skillful with fear, know how to approach fear with wisdom, with compassion, with empathy, and with a skillful response. So this is from Thanissara Bhikkhu on fear. Think of a deer at night suddenly caught in a hunter's headlights. It is confused, angry. It senses danger and that it's weak in the face of the danger. It wants to escape. These five elements, confusion, aversion, the sense of danger, a sense of weakness, and a desire to escape, are present to a greater or lesser extent in every fear. The confusion and aversion are the unskillful elements. Even if the deer has many openings to escape from the hunter, its confusion and aversion may cause it to miss them. The same holds true for human beings. The mistakes and evils we commit when finding ourselves weak in the face of danger come from confusion and aversion. And so he wanted to say the other aspects, the sense of danger and maybe a desire to remove from the danger, can be skillful. So we're wanting to keep that in mind, that we want to really ask that question, when is the fear skillful, when is it not? And so then how do we practice? And maybe I should just say that there also are fears that are very much related to maybe something that's happened that's been painful in the past. You know, trauma, often when it is reactivated, will lock us in fear related to the past. And there are also ways in which, you know, we can know that if we get caught in an old pattern from the past, there can be fear, and it's being generated because we've slipped back to a pattern. That also will point to a way of working with fear. Maybe I'll come back to that. So how to practice with fear? Let me be on the brief side here. And I want to suggest that a major way to practice with fear is to bring mindfulness to it, to study fear, as in the Bread and Puppet Theater. Very, you know, I'll come back to one of the guidelines for practice that I often give, which is clarify the level of intensity, in this case, of the fear, on using that 1 to 10 scale. If it's in the workable range, maybe below 8 or below 9, however you frame that, mindfulness is a wonderful practice to work with fear, because we can then go deeper. This is in formal meditation. And also during the day, if we can be with it, to see what the fear is, to study the fear, to study it closely. What I found in those 10 days of being with fear was that fear is always about the future. It's virtually never about the present moment. It's always about something that may happen or some pain that will be in the present moment. So it's very helpful to bring the mindfulness to the fear, to study it, to see what the content is, to see what my top five fears are, and so forth, and to discover a lot of what we were exploring just in sharing what the content of fear is, what the bodily dimension of fear is, how the mind works, what happens when we stay with fear. Does it go maybe to other emotions, to anger or to compassion, perhaps, and so forth. So mindfulness becomes a core tool. And again, very crucial to know the level of intensity. When the level of intensity may be too much for us to really bring mindfulness to the fear, That's when we want to have an antidote. That's when we want to work with ways of coming back to balance when there's fear, when the fear is too much. You know, it may be, you know, when we are near a sharp drop and we feel fear, it may not be the most skillful thing just to be mindful. Let me just be mindful here. It may be valuable just to come back to balance being away from the fear as soon as possible. Sometimes that's going to be valuable. And especially when the fear is too great, that's when we bring in what we call in meditation antidotes. And loving kindness, as Mary was suggesting, is a wonderful antidote. Some of you know that there's a story, which I think is in the Visuddhimagga, of the origins of metta practice as the Buddha offering a group of practitioners loving kindness as a way to find a way to come out of fear. The story is that these practitioners went to a forest. They were offered a place to practice by the tree spirits. The tree spirits said, yeah, you're fine to stay here. But then the practitioners overstayed their welcome. The tree spirit said, okay, you're fine to stay here, but you're staying too long. And so they were able to manifest horrible smells and horrible images. The practitioners basically were totally caught up in fear. They went back to the Buddha and he said, all right, you need metta practice. And so they went back into the forest. The horrible smells and images came. They practiced metta. The horrible smells and images kept on coming. They stayed with the metta. And eventually the tree spirit said, you know, this metta is okay. And I think you're okay to stay. And so they became friends, which is actually the etymology of metta in friendship. And so metta can be a beautiful practice when it's well developed for fear. And I've used metta for fear when it's a very strong fear many, many times. You know, when I can recall waking up a few times or being really consumed by fear that was just really, really strong. It's happened a few times. And then going to metta, and the metta being a concentration practice has been able to basically suppress the fear. Not our usual strategy with what's coming up to suppress something, but when there's fear that's in the unworkable range, suppressing the fear with metta or with some other practice is skillful. It also could be doing something physical, taking a walk, and so forth. We can do all these things to really work with the fear. So finding the antidote can really be a very key way to work with fear that's too strong. It could be grounding in the body again, talking with a friend, taking a walk, doing something very physical. All that can be helpful. We can also, sometimes with fear, go into what arouses faith or understanding. We can read texts. We can go to the refuges. We can think of a teacher or an exemplar. What would this person do? And that can give us energy sometimes for being with the fear. The Dalai Lama says, when I have fear, I always go to my intention to learn to be awake. And this is, you know, so he goes to his strong intention when there's fear. A further way is going into inquiry. And I'll go back to that example. Think of someone, you know, I think this is an actual example of someone, the people that I've known, who have had experiences where the parents divorced when they were quite young. And people sometimes develop what we call limiting beliefs in these situations. A very common limiting belief is, when I'm close to someone, that person will leave me. children develop that. Sometimes they think it's their fault, right? It's very, very common. And so that child who's had that experience, when that child is now an adult and has a relationship, has a partner, the partner wants, let's say, to leave for a weekend or is going away for a while, it's very common for fear to be aroused. And it's really actually the old fear of abandonment coming up, right, from that past experience. And so there, the fear arising, we'd want to look at it and work with it, bringing some mindfulness or maybe some metta, some compassion. But we'd also want to go into, we might say, the old wound. And the fear in this case is calling for the old wound. It could be an old trauma, an old limiting belief. We're calling for the something that's old, which triggers the fear, to be worked with, healed, transformed. So that'd be another way of working with fear. Okay. So let me finish really with that. Let me give a reading from a book, one of my favorite books. This is called The Book of Qualities by Ruth Gendler, who's a neighbor, and she personifies about 50 qualities. And fear is one of them, you know, personification of fear and patience, confusion, loneliness, courage, and so forth. This is fear. Okay, I'll finish with this. Fear has a large shadow, but he himself is quite small. He has a vivid imagination. He composes horror music in the middle of the night. Yeah, I like that. He is not very social and he keeps to himself at political meetings. His past is a mystery. He warned us not to talk to each other about him, adding that there is nowhere any of us could go where he wouldn't hear us. We were quiet. When we began to talk to each other, he changed. His manner started to seem pompous and his snarling voice sounded rehearsed. Two dragons guard Fear's mansion. One is ceramic and Chinese. The other is real. If you make it past the dragons and speak to him close up, it is amazing to see how fragile fear is. He will try to tell you stories. Be aware. He is a master of disguises and illusions. Fear almost convinced me that he was a puppet mask maker and I was a marionette. Speak out boldly. Look him in the eye. Startle him. Don't give up. Win his respect and he will never bother you with small matters. Okay, fear composes horror music in the middle of the night. There we go. So let's take a moment just to reflect what comes up for you in relation to fear and practicing with fear. What may have been sparked by the talk and by the sharing. What might you want to share? What question might you have? Take a few moments. So let's open it up now and I'll welcome any sharing or any question. Looks like Avita, then Nancy.
So I really like the idea of looking at the source of the fear.
Yeah.
So I'm identifying with Mary. What happens to me, I mean, I remember in Israel, we were driving up this narrow path, going up a mountain or something, and I froze. So I freeze, and if anything, and then I can actually visualize my falling. So I don't know how to get beyond that to investigate. Because the fear is absolutely, Mary smiling. it's not part of the normal me.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we want to first clarify the level of intensity. And maybe at that moment it was a 9 or a 10.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's too much there. So then what's skillful to do is to see if you can unfreeze and, or, you know, in my language, I said, find an antidote to the fear, find some way to move out of that frozen place, you know, or just ask your, you know, ask with clarity what's wise right now. But often it would be to move out of the frozen place. Then maybe later you could do some inquiry by bringing back the experience of fear at a later time, bringing it back as if you're reliving it, and then explore it. We can do that with our experience. Yeah, does that resonate? Ida, thanks. Okay. Nancy, then Barbara.
Yeah. I can't think of a more perfect topic for me. Yesterday morning, I woke up before the day long, and I was fairly miserable throughout the first half of the day. I'm the person who said daughter being pregnant. This Sangha knows that I've gone through a very difficult year, so I was thrilled to discover that my daughter is pregnant. However, I woke up gripped with fear yesterday morning that I couldn't shake for a while. I nearly died when she was born.
Well,
I had a child who died before her. They were both premature. I had something called preeclampsia, which can be very dangerous. And whether there's a genetic component is not known in terms of inquiry. But I felt like that deer that you talked about. I was just frozen. You know, one of the things I kept thinking as you were talking is you have to remember to remember. All I could do was just wait until it passed enough for me to, you know, mobilize. And I need a way to deal with my own fear for the next 7 months until, or 6.5 months until she delivers. So I've got a lot of trauma around it. And so this is a perfect topic for me.
Yeah. And what would you say if you had to think of two or three wise ways to work with it? What comes to you?
Well, I like what you said about the mindfulness. I feel like I've done inquiry into it.
Yeah.
I've educated myself. I'm aware of the trauma. I'm aware of the medical realities. So I think it somewhere lies between my mindfulness practice and distracting my mind. But I think the first thing to do when I'm overwhelmed, like I was yesterday morning, is just remember to, I don't know what I would do. Remember to just begin to have an awareness practice about it. I guess that's the best I can do.
Would it help to call someone on the phone and talk about
it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I did talk to friends, although it was early in the morning. But yes, I could.
And I'm also wondering whether there's, would you say that there's still some remaining pain and trauma from the past that you could work through further?
Yeah, you say that and I can feel, probably, yeah.
Because that could be skillful.
Yeah.
Yeah, to work with someone who's skilled in working with trauma.
Yeah.
That might actually directly relate to what you experience the next 7 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, that's a great idea. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we could probably say some more things, but those are good starts.
Thank you, Donald.
Yeah, thank you. Barbara, please.
Well, my fears sometimes are physical, and I have night terrors. And all I can do is, if I open myself to that, I could see my brain looking for reasons to be afraid. And I have some physical health stuff. But what I have found with the night terrors, when I used to just, that would be it. I'd be awake for the rest of the night. Yeah. But I could open myself to the fears of everyone and being into that opening myself to the fear, and really, and I'll think about people. Now I'll think about Nancy. I think about the people in Ukraine. I think of the fears that we're all sharing. And somehow opening myself to that fear, including even the fear of Jesus. I mean, the fear of Jesus that Jesus had, not the fear of Jesus. You know what I mean? Anyway, that somehow opening myself to the common fear.
Yeah.
Begin to ease, you know, and then I could look at the physical manifestations and I can clear myself of it.
That's beautiful to kind of really feel, we might say, the shared humanity of the experience. I was thinking of Kristen Neff's, three-part self-compassion practice, very simple. Yes. You know, acknowledge this is painful, this is hard, number one. Number two, acknowledge the shared humanity of the situation, that others are experiencing this. And thirdly, just to offer some kind words, some support in some way. But I think particularly that, you know, that really connecting with others, that sounds very, very rich.
I have friends that are going through some really terrible things right now. Yeah. And that almost helps me. I'm almost grateful sometimes for my own fears because it can open me.
It opens you and permits you to really maybe be there more fully for them and resonate, right?
Yeah, no, it's true.
I didn't mention that, but that's, you know, to the extent that we've looked deeply at this ourselves, we can be better with others, right? Who are experiencing that. Maybe last one, because I think we should move soon to the meta cards. Is that right, Bill? We're about time for that. Okay. So let's, Deborah, be the last one.
We're talking about antidotes, right?
That's one of the ways of practicing, yeah.
Okay. So I think Mary said something about, okay, so I get anxiety, total anxiety. My whole family is riddled with it. And so what I need to do is, I guess, mindful awareness. It's like, oh, I'm being anxious right now when I talk about the mind racing. And then the way I antidote it is to stop, take some parasympathetic breathing, and think of my family legacy and how I came by this biochemically, probably in the womb. Yeah. And then I give myself metta.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of drawing on some teachings. I was just listening to Richard Schwartz and Rick Hansen and things that Philip Moffitt has said. I remember this very clearly from Philip. If I can't send metta out right now and I feel bad about myself for that, I give myself metta for when I will be able to do that.
Yeah.
So when that kind of disappointment or fearfulness or I'm failing or I didn't get it right or I forgot to do this, that's usually my three steps is to take some deep breaths and think about my family members and then do the best I can with metta for myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you have some very, very helpful approaches, which are really very similar to what we've explored, you know. A certain degree of mindfulness just to study it at times when it's workable. And then, you know, you're bringing in more of the wisdom dimension, the understanding, okay, this has some roots in my background, some of my family conditioning and so forth. And then sometimes just bringing in the metta, the kindness to hold it, right? And so, so I think it's valuable to think of having these multiple tools to work with it. I'm hearing several from you. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Great. So in a moment, or maybe right now, let me just invite you to ask, you know, how many of you would like to give some attention before we meet next week to this when it comes up to work, to look at? How many of you would be the one who set out to study fear, at least a little bit? Okay. So just ask yourself, how can I do that? How can I remember to do that? How can I be more skillful? How can I be skillful in bringing attention here when it comes up?